Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Listen to this quote and try to guess what it's referring to. Quote, if I do the math, I know we've been here a good 8 months, but that's just a number. There is day and night, today and tomorrow, and the rest is a blur. Sound familiar? Thanks to the pandemic, we've been in a relative lockdown for about 8 months, give or take. We've talked a bit on the show about that weird sense of time, the days blending together. After all, today is Blur's Day, right? But listeners, that quote I read is not about COVID time. That's a quote from back in 2016, long before COVID. The quote is about what it's like to live on Mars, or at least what it's like to live in a simulated Martian habitat. Since 2013, NASA has been sending teams of scientists to a base in Hawaii. Their mission? To study the psychological and logistical issues that might come up when it's time to send a human crew to the Red Planet. The mission is called the Hawaii Space Exploration Analog and Simulation, or High Seas. And it looks at what happens when cramped quarters, boredom, stress, roommates getting on each other's nerves all collide and asks, how could those affect the safety and health of our very first Martian explorers? Joining us now is documentary filmmakers Lauren DiFilippo and Catherine Gorange, whose latest film, Red Heaven, follows a year in the life of six high seas participants. It is streaming now as part of Doc NYC. Lauren, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you.
And Catherine, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having us.
So Lauren, you filmed this back in 2015, 2016. It's 2020 now. We're going to talk about all about this film, but I'm curious, with the perspective that you have now in 2020, looking back in 2015, 2016, is there something from this film and from this time that really resonates with you?
Oh, yes, so many things. And it's just so interesting watching the film now after having lived in quarantine myself and just understanding on a much deeper level what these crew members went through. I think kind of you hit the nail on the head with the quote at the beginning of just the time blur and how one thing, you know, just sort of bleeds into the next. And that was certainly, you know, what they felt inside that dome for a year, kind of just things sort of flowing by and not really putting down markers anymore. And time just really has been changing. So definitely feel that more in the film and in our lives now.
Catherine, how about you?
Oh, definitely. Just echoing what Lauren said. I mean, the thing that we really thought a lot about while we were creating the film is just like what human beings need on a very fundamental level. Mm-hmm. And I think we've all been kind of wrestling with that as we've been isolated from our loved ones and stuck at home, and in some cases, you know, I live in California where there were fires, and there was a solid month during the pandemic where we also couldn't go outside. And so just trying to kind of dig deep and see what we really need to thrive in our lives.
So the way the film was made, Lauren, for our audience so they understand, the NASA crew actually captured most of the footage we see. How did you turn these scientists into good filmmaking partners?
it was a process. You know, basically what happened was we knew we wanted to make a film about space and space exploration. It was really changing, I think, in the way it was being talked about. You know, people were referring to Mars as not only a place to go and explore and learn from, but also as a backup planet, should we sort of, you know, destroy what we have here on Earth and need a plan B. And that just was so compelling to me and Catherine. And so we started to dig in, just kind of believing that there was a film there. And we found the High Seas program and called them up and said, we'd love to make a film about this. And they said, no way. This is a real science experiment. We're not going to let some filmmakers, you know, come lurk around the dome with these participants, you're going to have to figure out something else. And we were just persistent. We heard that they were going in for a year, which was going to be the longest simulation ever done in North America. And we pretty much, you know, as first-time filmmakers, were kind of naive enough as well to just drop what we were doing, fly to Hawaii. And we were able to spend about 2 weeks with the crew as they were preparing, as they were training to go into the dome. And during the course of that time, we got them on board with this idea that we would give them our cameras and they would do the filming for us over the course of the year. And we could be in touch with them through email, which was on a 20-minute delay to simulate Mars. But basically, they would shoot their experience, and we would sort of guide and direct as much as we possibly could remotely over the course of the year.
Catherine, you told Salon that you had more than 100 hours of footage. You were also, I believe, the editor on this project. As you were going through all of this footage, what were you looking for?
Well, I think just like any editor approaching a body of footage in a documentary, you're really just listening and being attentive and seeing what speaks to you and what fascinates you. And so that's what we did. You know, it was really collaborative between Lauren and I. And we, you know, I watched everything and sent her stuff and we discussed it. And we were just trying to find the story. You know, this is such a unique documentary in a way, because there are archival documentaries where you get a bunch of footage from, you know, some historical event or that someone has shot. And then there's a more verite documentary where you're the director and you're shooting it. But we kind of did neither. It was like a collaborative found footage film. And so we knew what we had and we knew our participants and we had relationships with everyone. But in a sense, we didn't know what we had, and it was this kind of mining the footage to see what was there. You know, and a big part of the process for us, too, is that we did all these outside interviews with expert, quote-unquote, voices, you know, people who, like, we interviewed Kim Stanley Robinson, who's a science fiction author, and Mary Roach, who did this amazing book, Packing for Mars. And to get them to comment on space exploration and what this all means. And the more that we edited, the more we realized that this is really an immersive film about this year in isolation. And we didn't want to jump out for any reflection. We wanted the reflection to be all part of the immersive experience.
And yeah, as a viewer, we're in there with them for the full length of the film. So you get that sense of claustrophobia. My guests are Lauren DeFilippo and Catherine Gorange. We're talking about their documentary, Red Heaven, which documents a year inside the High Seas Project, which was simulating what life would be like if we sent people to Mars. So, Lauren, let's talk about a little bit about what life was like, what we get to see. One of the things that was really interesting to me and my producer was, the crew members have the opportunity to wear virtual headsets at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that part of the experiment?
Yeah, so that was basically a VR experiment that was kind of happening simultaneously. There were sort of all these little offshoot experiments that were happening within the larger psychological NASA experiment. And so that was, yeah, a group of scientists and VR innovators who were really trying to kind of hone that technology for astronauts on the ISS and astronauts going on these longer duration missions that are hopefully being planned for in the future. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. It both gave them the opportunity to go to different environments and, you know, if they wanted to go to the beach that day or on a picnic, wherever it may be. But it also allowed for their family members to kind of leave virtual messages for them in the virtual space. And so they could go in and kind of talk to family members in a way. And so, yeah, that was kind of just an interesting little side note that we got to see unfold.
Catherine, after viewing all this footage, what were some of the points of tension? What were some of the things that you can see it start to happen?
Well, what we really discovered is that there are kind of two kinds of people who are attracted to doing something like this, whether it's be an astronaut or participate in a Mars simulation and stay in isolation for a solid year. And there's kind of this version of the personality that's more like the right stuff. Like, I want to work for NASA. I want to be an astronaut more than anything in the world. And then there's the more quiet scientist type that is interested in collecting the data and getting the information that's going to help us learn more about our planet and our solar system. And we kind of found that tension playing out amongst the crew, that some people were more by the book, that they wanted to play it safe and minimize risk. And other people were like, I'm going to go out and explore and check out this landscape and see what's going on. And so we saw a tension start to build around this idea of extravehicular activity going out on EVA, exploring the landscape. And then that kind of just furthered into the crew splitting apart from each other and basically not speaking towards the end.
Another point of tension is trying to communicate with people at home and what it means to be isolated from where you're from. And we see that there's a 20-minute communication delay. You mentioned it earlier because that's what would happen in Mars. And one of the crew members who is from France, he finds out about the terrorist attacks that were there in November 2015 at the Bataclan Theater, which, you know, was horrible, killed 130 people, 460 more were injured, and that stress of not being able to communicate with people in real time. And this is so strange, ladies. I was watching this film. I said, gosh, this woman looks really familiar. And I realized that I had interviewed Shayna before.
Oh, wow.
After she'd come out for The Atlantic for this project called On the Launch Pad, Return to Deep Space. And I interviewed Shayna Gifford. She's the physician. And she was one of the panelists I was talking to. And so we pulled a clip where she talks about that communication delay. Let's take a listen.
The stressors of not being able to pick up that phone and talk to your family are real, and they're profound. And we had family things go on. My crewmate Cyprian was on the mission when there was the attack in Nice, and he found out about it during dinner. And Mission Control had to call us and say, we're so sorry, we have to tell you about this. And he sat there in front of his computer, willing it to fork over information about his friends and family. I think he sat there all night, frankly, because it was nighttime in Europe by that point. My grandmother died while I was on mission. Mm-hmm. I said goodbye to her over delayed video. And that's not something you ever want to do, but it's something you do and life goes on. And that morning I got up and I did my job.
How much contact did the crew members have with their families, Lauren?
Well, it really varied. I think what was, you know, pretty unique for us to watch was how in the beginning it seemed as though there was a lot of contact and people were really keeping in touch. And over the course of the time, people, you know, life is busy. People got busy and it sort of dwindled. And that was really hard, especially for one of the crew members, Tristan. He talks about it in the film. You know, I think even when we would write to them, you know, they would write us back kind of these epically long emails because they simply had a lot more time on their hands and wanted some human connection, you know, outside of the dome. And it was always hard. You know, I think they were annoyed if we'd write them just a couple lines back. So it was always like trying to put a little bit more out there. But yeah, I think that really will be a difficult challenge of space exploration. I'm sure NASA will handle it well, but it was something that was really difficult. And ultimately, they felt pretty forgotten by a lot of family members while they were inside.
Catherine, as I said, this was a very important experiment. Like at the beginning when NASA said, no way, we're doing serious work here. What is it that NASA was really trying to find out? Was it about how humans interact? Was it about how to sustain humanity up there? What were they looking for?
Well, so there's this larger question that's about what happens to people emotionally and psychologically over long duration missions, because that's the future of space exploration. This kind of era of the right stuff pilot who just gets shot up in a rocket for an hour is over. And now the idea is that we'll send people on these long missions and they'll have to survive. And it really takes a toll on people's well-being. So they want to track that just in a larger way. And there's this idea of the four quarters of the experience. And there's the first quarter where everyone's really excited and it's all fresh and new and it's all possibility. And then the second quarter is like settling into the experience. the third quarter is the monotony hits and people are in absolute despair because there's no end in sight and there's nothing to kind of keep them going at that point. And then the fourth quarter, things kind of kick up and people can see that the end is coming and they start to feel better about it. So this is true about stays at the McMurdo Base in Antarctica. They've tracked historically long sea voyages, and it all follows that similar trajectory, which we follow in the film. And then there's much more detailed questions that they ask about food and what kind of food people need, because I think we used to have this kind of a retro future idea that we would just give people pills for meals. But what they're really discovering is that people being able to cook and eat together and the idea of a meal and regular meals really does a lot to go towards people's emotional well-being when they're on these missions. So there are all these smaller things like that that they're trying to figure out about what people need.
My guests are Lauren DiFilippo and Catherine Gorringe. We're talking about their documentary, Red Heaven, about the simulation of what like might be like for people as they travel to Mars. So this is so cheesy of me to ask about it, but I'm going to ask about the romance part about it, because we get a romance strikes up between Cyprian, the astrobiologist, and Christiane, the physicist. How did the rest of the crew feel about that?
I think they were hesitant at first. Mm-hmm. There was a little wariness of, oh no, how is this going to end? Are we all going to be immersed in this romance and its ups and downs? And I think ultimately, Christiana and Cyprian were just so honestly professional about it and really knew that they were putting the crew, the collective crew first, and that was kind of first and foremost what mattered to them, that they were able to keep it pretty civilized, I think, overall. And obviously, you know, it really helped them, I think, survive the year. Of course, it brings up a lot of questions for them, those others who don't have that partner to get through the year with.
We have a clip from your film of Christiane. This is what she said about the relationship as it pertained to the mission.
I had a conversation with Kamal once our relationship was public within the crew. And she asked me, like, you know what you're doing? And I'm like, yes, I know what I'm doing. And so she was like, I trust you. NASA is kind of trying to keep the topic down, you know, relationships and sex. Those things, they don't happen. That's kind of the official line. You know, if we really want to think about sending humans on missions that are 2.5 years long, it's totally idiotic to believe or to try to make people believe that there's not going to be any kind of relationship.
It's interesting that she says that there, Lauren, that NASA sort of played it down. Do you have any sense of why that would be after watching all this footage or in all your research?
I think that NASA just kind of has a little bit of an unrealistic expectation about humans in these scenarios, that it's supposed to remain completely professional, and that, you know, there can't be any kind of romantic entanglements otherwise. And I know, yeah, that's very much kind of the protocol that they are pushing for. I think, you know, something like the simulation and these types of experiments just show the real difficulty and challenge of the reality of the situation, though, and how, you know, perhaps they kind of need to rethink some of that.
Catherine, after watching all this footage and rewatching the film, what did you learn about what makes people happy, what people need? Did you get a sense of what we actually really need?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a big question, and the film really explores that from a lot of different angles. And there are simple things, like I said, eating together and being together and on a regular basis. You know, people want and need love and romance. They need friendship. And I think the film ultimately at a point gets at the fact that we need some kind of collective goal and collaboration. And that's really what brings us together.
The name of the film is Red Heaven. It premiered yesterday and it's available to stream at Doc NYC. I've been speaking with its directors, Lauren DiFilippo and Catherine Gorringe. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to speak with you.